Arizona sports, the local sports leader.
Bickley and Murata Mornings, Social Studies, brought to you by HigherPrice.com. Carol Royce, your home sold guaranteed realty.
We kick off the 9 o'clock hour with some Social Studies from Sarah Cazell. My voice got high there, didn't it?
Sure.
Love
did.
That. What? Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi.
Why, hello there.
Welcome into Social Studies, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this NFL Draft edition of Social Studies, talking all about the Cardinals and what they are going to do with that number 4 pick to start off. We're on Twitter /X at Bickley _ Murata. We're also on Instagram as a show at Bickley and Murata, so you can see videos from every day on the show there. All right. What do you want the Cardinals to do tonight of these 4 options and why? Pick Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4. Pick someone else at 4. Trade the 4th pick, get a different receiver, or trade the 4th pick and draft a different position overall.
Yeah, I've been very consistent all along. It's A for me. Draft Marvin Harrison Jr.
Me too. We've both been on this, not standing on the table by any stretch, but consistent in that desire. Why switch now? We're hours away from this pick happening. Let's do this.
Do you guys want to guess the percentage of how many people voted for Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4?
97%.
67%.
Ooh. Somewhere in between. 84%.
Wow. Okay.
Want the Cardinals to take Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4. 13% say trade the 4th pick, but still take another one of those top wide receivers. 3% say trade the 4th pick, take a different position altogether. 0.6% say pick at 4, but just draft somebody else. Oren Keen, love this explanation or love this reasoning from him. If you pick Marvin Harrison Jr. and he's a bust, no one will blame you. If you don't pick him and he becomes a 12-time All-Pro, no one will ever let you forget it. Just draft the guy.
It's kind of like the same theory that's affecting the Bears and Caleb Williams. Yes. Even if you were convicted that you like Drake May better, can you pass on him at 1 and deal with all that? Yeah.
But less I don't. Smoke?
It's like taking DeAndre Ayton over.
It's like taking Mitch Trubisky over.
The only time I can ever remember this actually happening was the Reggie Bush year, where it felt like Reggie Bush was obviously the number one, this generational talent.
And they picked Mario Williams.
Yeah. Who may have had a better career than Reggie Bush in the
Bulls. By the way, congratulations to Reggie Bush.
Get your trophy back. Hope they didn't give him O.J. Simpson's.
Oop.
Maybe they had an extra.
Back up. It's re-retired now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They never took 32 down.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. The one that you read, the last response that you read.
From Oren Keen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't get totally on board with the first part. If you draft Marvin Harrison Jr. and he's a bust, nobody will blame you. There's other factors involved. What do those other receivers do?
Okay.
If Adunze or Neighbors becomes that 10-time All-Pro, you're still going to get.
But I think what she's getting at is if anytime a team passes on what seems to be the obvious and the obvious hits, then how do you answer for that?
Yeah, true.
It's all hindsight 2020, but it applies. Nicole says, just pick Marvin. You can have all the draft picks in the world, but if you don't have quality talent, you'll never win anything. Get a knockout receiver and play with other picks if you must. The team needs Marvin. The fans need Marvin. And last one for this question, Smorkart says, I saw a Facebook memory come up yesterday about how ecstatic I was when everything aligned perfectly and Isaiah Simmons fell to the Cardinals at 8. The point is, we won't know for 4 years if it's the right pick, but passing on Marvin Harrison Jr. could be historic if he hits. Just take him. Sticking with the NFL draft for our next question in today's edition of Social Studies, of these 4 quarterbacks, who's going to have the best NFL career and why? Your picks are Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and J.J. McCarthy.
Ooh.
Last week we did most likely to be a bust.
Yeah.
This week, who's going to be the best?
I've said it several times. I have doubts on all of these guys. If I have to pick one of them that I think will succeed, I'm going to pick the guy who I think is the most talented, and that's Caleb Williams. even though he's going into a situation in Chicago where they've never had a franchise quarterback for a sustained amount of time.
Listen, body type and the fact that, Jaden Daniels is not going to be a dual threat in the NFL. If he wants any sustainability, he's not.
If he doesn't want to snap in half.
Yeah, exactly. J.J. McCarthy, I'm not buying him. I'm going to vote Caleb Williams, too.
Yeah. Okay. It's pretty spread out among our voters, but Caleb Williams is the leader for the best NFL career. 36% go with him. 24% say Drake May will have the best NFL career. 21% say it's going to be J.J. McCarthy. 19% go for Jaden Daniels. Tim Hoekstra says Caleb Williams, starting out with a talented group around him, and he also appears to have the best combination of size, skill, and experience. Now, does he have the Bears curse working against him? And then a couple people threw in Bo Nix. A couple people threw in Michael Penix Jr. And then this from Mike AZ CPA. He says, at some point in the future, Jaden Daniels will be compared to Akili Smith or Jamarcus Russell in terms of first-round NFL draft busts.
Jaden Daniels will?
Yeah.
Wow.
He parlayed one good season at LSU into becoming a top five NFL draft pick. What do you guys think about that? As two people who saw a lot of Jaden Daniels here in the Valley.
When he left ASU, I didn't think there was any chance he was going to be an NFL quarterback. So credit to him. Credit to the people at LSU.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with
Joe Burrow parlayed one good year at LSU into a number one overall selection, too.
He's correct.
Pretty damn good.
And he has earned his keep, certainly. All right, do we want to get to the most recognizable sound in sports at this point?
Shut up, Jared!
There you go. I love it. Love it, Vinny.
All right, we're done. That was it. That was the answer. Because you played the draft sounder earlier, Vince.
Yes. I had another football-related one that came to mind. Everybody knows what that means.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
I would vote clearly the swish of a basketball, the doink of a football hitting a goalpost, the sound of a puck hitting the crossbar,
the crack of the bat.
All good ones.
Shut up, Jared!
The basketball shoe squeaking on the gym floor.
That's a good one.
Says Michael Beiler.
The bounce of the basketball at the practice facility when the media is trying to conduct interviews with players and coaches.
The sound of Pete Carroll chewing gum, says Matt Handel. The crack of the bat. Oh, and then there's one that I wanted to find real quick. The whistle, the sound of the whistle from Austin Powers Faja.
Isn't that weird?
Austin Powers Faja, Dr. Reaver.
He's Faja.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
The social studies every day at 9 o'clock. Thanks for chiming in. At @Bickley_Murata on X. Coming up next, we just talked about it, who we want the Cardinals to get at number 4. The Cardinals quarterback knows what he wants the Cardinals to get at number 4. Will he get it? We'll explain next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, everybody, it's Bernsey, and the countdown to the NFL draft is nearly complete. So who's going to be wearing Cardinal red at the end of the night? Join us as we're broadcasting live from the BetMGM Sportsbook on the great lawn of State Farm Stadium from 2 until the end of the first round of the draft here on Arizona Sports.
Well, let's start with the stay put option here. It does seem to be receiver would make the most sense, I think, for them, with all due respect to those mock drafts which have been going edge. And, you know, from my understanding, it doesn't seem like there's a huge separation between Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. But if they're picking, they got to pick one. And, you know, I would go with Buda Baker, who is a great evaluator. I think Bugatti Marv, which is not actually his nickname, but certainly would make some sense. I think that would, you know, be a potential face of the franchise there alongside Kyler Murray.
That is Ian Rappaport a couple days ago on NFL Network on the stay put option for the Arizona Cardinals at number 4. And there seems to be a report, we referenced this earlier in the show, Matt Miller of ESPN in his mock draft from yesterday had the little nugget that said sources around the NFL say Harrison has an assurance from the Cardinals that he will be the pick if available at this spot. Now, we kind of poked holes in maybe the verbiage or the way that verbiage was presented, but that is the thinking out there. Kyler Murray, tweeted earlier today, something about today just feels right. Vibes are immaculate. Apparently earlier in the week, Kyler Murray sat down and did an interview with FoxNews.com, of all places. Fox News Digital.
Yes.
And he talked about being locked in. He said, quote, "I don't know if there's another quarterback in the league more locked in at me than me 3 days before the draft." And Murray said, "In 3 days, we get better." He also elaborated and says, "I've put my foot on the table for a couple guys in the past. It didn't work out. Obviously, things happen. It is what it is. We move on. But I've got full faith in the guys upstairs. It's a new regime. Last year, they did a hell of a job. This year, obviously, with me being out and just the culture shift and the way I saw guys buy in, it's been a complete 180 for us. I'm just excited. I know Monty and JG are on the same page, and I know any decision they make is going to be the best for the team. Obviously, that's the corporate answer, but I know who I want. We'll see if it happens."
Okay.
He's not saying who, but we'll be able to tell by his reaction.
No, but the fact that he feels comfortable enough to call him the most locked, himself, the most locked in quarterback in the NFL, yes. that should be appealing to every Cardinals fan.
Yes.
Whether you like Kyler Murray or not, for him to come out and say, "I am on this," should make you feel good.
Well, and for him to reference a complete 180 and talking about a culture shift and buy-in, for a guy who once upon a time on this show was nicknamed the Grumpy Cat.
Yeah. It's one of my better nicknames.
You could turn around the Grumpy Cat. Something must be working with this new regime.
Yeah.
So that's all very promising.
Right. And again, I think it also reflects just how utterly dysfunctional the previous regime happened to be. And so, listen, that's Darren Urban said this too. You can sit here and you can get excited about edge rushers and wide receivers. It all gets down to the quarterback. And if you've got one that's elite, that can win big football games. And Kyler Murray was that guy for a minute and he fell down, and let's hope we're watching him get back up, because that's what gets me excited.
It's like I've always said, Bic, you get knocked down, you get up again. Nothing's ever going to keep me down.
Drink some whiskey, drink some cider drink. I think I figured out his tweet also.
Oh, with the karate gi
emoji? The martial arts outfit there. Yeah. Bugatti, Maserati, karate.
Wow. Wow.
Subtle, but.
Wow.
It is funny in that article how he's like, I stood on the table for other guys and they pretty much ignored me. Obviously, his Oklahoma teammates, he wanted them to draft wide receivers and they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, we can go back to the CeeDee Lamb example.
With all due respect to Kyler Murray, they should ignore you. You're a quarterback. Yeah. You're not a talent evaluator.
True. But we know that certain mm-hmm. players with certain teams at certain positions, they do have a little bit of say. And Kyler Murray, it seems like every year he's been here, regardless of regime, he has shared his thoughts on what he wants. He shared his thoughts on offensive linemen in the past, certainly on receivers in the past. Hasn't worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. So listen, I hope the whole thing is streamlined. I mean, we all have seen and we've talked to a blue in the face at the height of their dysfunction, that clip of Michael Bidwill asking Cliff Kingsbury, "Who you like? Andy Isabella?" Okay. That's you talk about a dysfunctional draft process. If you've got the owner asking the head coach, "Who do you prefer?" and the general manager's over there waiting for an answer, no bueno.
It's like they did one round of draft prep and got to the second round. Like, oh, crap.
Yeah. But you got to believe that Monty Ossenfort, that he's doing this on his terms. At least you would hope. I mean, granted, every owner has to sign off on everything, but I really hope that this is just a situation where Monty Ossenfort Ford is the guy, and what he says goes, and that there's not too many cooks in the kitchen. You know what happens when there's too many cooks in the kitchen, Jared? You get bean night at the Carlin household.
Oh, geez. You only need one cook for that.
That's why I completely stay out of the kitchen.
Same. I just don't want to mess things up, so I stay out entirely. Exactly.
This has got to be the most fun and most stressful time of year to be a GM. Like, it's got to be the most fun because you get to, like, it's like the most fun of a fantasy league is the draft. you get to come up with all these scenarios and evaluate and stuff, but it must be so stressful because he's going into the draft tonight not even knowing where he's going to pick in theory.
Well, true. I definitely agree with the most stressful part. You could look at free agency, but when it's free agency, at least you have some sort of groundwork done on what these players have done at the NFL level. How many guys have just struggled with the jump from college football to the NFL? You don't know. Even some of the best, you know, the best prospects in every class don't pan out. So I definitely the most stressful, but certainly the most fun. As a GM, you're an architect. You're a builder.
And as Dennis Green, former Cardinal coach, used to get such a big kick out of this, but he loved the idea that every year you could get football players for free. That every year you could just bring in 8 to 9 guys free. Well, not free. You got to pay them, but you know what I mean. It doesn't cost anything to acquire them.
And they have no choice, mostly, to join your team, unlike free agency, where it has to be a two-way agreement.
True. Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I'm fine with that. I like the idea. I like the fact that Monty Austin Ford is just as capable wheeling and dealing as he is. Nope, this player is what we want, what we need. Let's just sit right here.
I do get a kick out of it. Well, since Monty Austin Ford was a wheeler and dealer in the first round last year, he's obviously going to do that this year.
Right.
Not necessarily the case. We don't know for a fact that that's M.O.'s M.O. Oh, baby.
Golly gee, you're hot today. Mr. Haverkamp.
That's a
your
peach,
ball's
huh?
over here, Mr. Haverkamp.
I were Monty Ostendorf.
No, Monty Austin Ford. I've heard a lot of people do that. I was listening to a draft show over last weekend driving around on a Saturday, and somebody dropped Monty Ostendorf.
Really?
I know.
Tua Tagovailoa.
What a
what?
Dwarf.
Who is that?
Tua Tagovailoa.
Enjoy Arizona Sports.
Ruben!
98.7 tonight. Round one of the NFL draft at Flanker's Kitchen inside BetMGM Sportsbook. Come witness Cardinals history with us. Get a chance to win autographed Cardinals merchandise. You can visit the contest page at arizonasports.com for complete details. Coming up next, a lot of pressure on the Suns' big three to turn this series against Minnesota around. We'll get more into that pressure next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Ruben Foster.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports poll question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Off to our website we go, arizonasports.com. I just mentioned in the update how much great draft coverage is up there right now on the website, arizonasports.com. So go check that out at some point today before the draft begins at 5 o'clock. Let's also answer today's poll question like we do every day at 9:30. All right, guys, I've got a really out-of-the-box question for you, okay?
Yes.
What will the Cardinals do with the number 4 pick? Will they draft a receiver? Or will they trade down?
Draft a receiver.
Yep.
72% of our voters say draft a receiver.
Thought you were going to go into Kenny Smith mode. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
72%, Sarah?
72%. 28% say they'll trade down.
And the 28% are like, well, Monty did it last year, so he's going to do it again this year. That's today's Sanderson Ford poll question. You can vote on it right now on the homepage at arizonasports.com.
Too many possessions earning up with their centers flailing at the rim. Their offense so far in this series was 7 points per 100 possessions worse than the worst offense in the regular season. Some of those possessions, they just look like they met each other yesterday. The big three yesterday, 48 points on 18 of 45 shooting. You can't win against this defense taking 22 threes and 19 free throws. This defense demands your full attention, and the Suns are playing with half attention.
Zach Lowe on NBA Today on ESPN on the Suns' offensive woes, and for me, it really came to a head in Game 2. Game 1, you call that the feel-out game, but the Suns looked very similar offensively, and what that does, Bic, is it gives a confident group of Minnesota Timberwolves defenders that much more confidence. Like, you know, it wasn't a one-game anomaly that we were able to shut down the big three.
Right.
We did it again.
Right.
And we made them look worse in Game 2, and the other disturbing fact that is really hard to get past when you look at, you know, games 3 and 4 here in Phoenix is that, know, most playoff series are going to come down to which group of star players is going to perform better. And not only have the Suns' stars been outplayed by Minnesota stars, but in game two, the Suns' stars got outplayed by Minnesota's role players.
Yeah, that cannot happen anymore. You said it earlier, and you're right on the money. Right now, if there was an MVP of the series, it's Jaden McDaniels. Nobody would have ever predicted that. I think the Suns should feel good that for all the amount of national media that went all in, and I mean all in on that dude, Anthony Edwards, I called up Michael Jordan, and he even said, that brother's legit. He's had one good game against Devin Booker in 12. And after his good game, they went right back to bottling him up. So if I were the Suns, I'd feel good about that.
But that's where you give credit to Minnesota, though. Anthony Edwards was not a big fan. I thought he hit one impactful basket in game two of the three that he made. But they won comfortably because their role players were so good and so impactful.
Yeah. So listen, there's a couple things that I've noticed in this series so far. Devin Booker doesn't look as quick as I've seen him in the past. It doesn't look like he's getting the same elevation. I don't know how he feels physically. I'm hoping he's fine. And I hope he can get loose in this. I also want to bring up something Dave Burns said yesterday, because I thought this was a great, great point. After game two, Frank Vogel said, quote, "We can't let the refs distract our focus. The refs didn't beat us. The T-Wolves did. We got some bad calls, but that happens in every game. It happened both ways. We have to be locked in, and we can't let that distract our focus." Blah, 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 blah. Burnsy pointed out that Frank Vogel, more than anybody, constantly pointed at the officiating to explain the too many turnovers in the Suns offense, to explain away bad games from Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. It was always the officiating. Why'd you turn the ball? Oh, you mean they're following us?
Especially at the end of the year, that happened a lot.
Yeah, and so for him now to try to get his team right psychologically, man, I think the haze out of the proverbial barn as far as that goes.
Yeah, I mean, the Suns have become solely a mid-range shooting team in this series. Yeah. And you heard it from Zach Lowe, you can't win that way. They've got the lowest number of three-point attempts of any team in the playoffs this year. They've got the third lowest number of three-point attempts of any team in the playoffs this year. So they're not shooting threes. If they don't have Grayson Allen, obviously that number probably dwindles a little bit. But, you know, what's the alternative? Most NBA offenses will, from an analytics standpoint, are about the three or a layup. Well, the Suns have been terrible at the rim, so everything is falling in that mid-range.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about this briefly, and I went back and I watched the Arizona's Family Sports post-game show. And they went back to Eddie Johnson, and I didn't know Eddie had talked about this. We touched on it briefly yesterday. The Suns' mindset against Rudy Gobert has just been one of complete fear and way too much respect. He is a great defensive player. He can block a lot of shots. Let him block shots. He's not challenged.
Hmm.
And when they do go in there, you know, Rudy Gobert is not only just normally he'll change shots or alter shots, block shots. He's changing the mindset of this team. They get in on a dribble drive when they don't turn it over, and immediately it's like, oh, Rudy's gonna Rudy's looming.
You're right.
Who can I pass to?
You're right.
And that has led to some of those possessions where Zach Lowe pointed out it's a big flailing late in the shot clock. I mean, people were giving crap to Drew Eubanks for, you know, throwing one off the window as the shot clock expired. The only reason that happened is because Drew Eubanks was given the ball 10 feet away from the hoop with 2 seconds on the clock. What could he do? This is a non-functioning offense right now.
There you go. That's a great way of describing it. So I don't know what the fix is. If there is going to be a fix, you're shaking your head, Jared.
What you said earlier about the hay being out of the barn, all week we've been making the joke. I think when we had Kellen on, Tim Ring on, they all made the joke. I think now is the time things are finally going to start clicking this weekend. Their chemistry is finally going to start. Like, we're so late into this whole experiment. They might have a game or two where they look good, where things are working, but you can't expect them all of a sudden they're going to figure it out.
No, it, every time you think they're trending towards figuring it out, we see games like this. We just haven't seen back-to-back games like this, but that's the playoffs for you.
And you said earlier, you made the point that they figured out, they went back to sort of what they did in the regular season, and they closed off the lanes, and they sort of shut down Anthony Edwards, who killed him in game one, but they still didn't win. They lost almost in the same kind of way, just with different pieces beating them.
I will say this. You brought up the point earlier in the show. The lack of a point guard is at the root of all of the Suns' issues, and also Frank Vogel, a defensive-minded coach, being hired, going back to last summer, being hired to coach an offensive-minded team.
Yep.
To Frank Vogel's credit at this point of the season, the Suns are, in my opinion, way more buttoned up defensively than they are offensively.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. And I thought they made really good defensive adjustments in game two.
Mm-hmm.
And the stat courtesy of Doug Haller, 9 times Frank Vogel has lost the first game of a playoff series, and 8 times his teams have rebounded to win game two. And that's because he can make defensive adjustments. And he did. Anthony Edwards went from being that dude to just having another kind of low wattage game.
But you can't score in the 90s and expect to win.
There is that. And
it's a make or miss league, Jerry.
Well, and here's the other thing about Frank Vogel in his defense. He has been prodding this team to shoot more three-pointers, and they just won't do it. And that one game they tried 50 that looked like a joke, like they were just trying to make a point, like it was almost a rebellion. And afterwards, Kevin Durant said, that's a little extreme, maybe 10 less than that. You just got to wonder about your mindset of your players. If your players, like Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, if they want to just do what's comfortable for them, and if they want to just make sure that they get theirs, then yeah, they're going to keep shooting mid-range shots.
Well,
but it's difficult now of Grayson Allen's availability.
Well, that, and look, you can't shoot a three-pointer if you don't have possession of the ball.
Oh, there's that.
So turning the ball, let's say half of those possessions end in three-pointers. You're talking about 32 attempts, which is a much more workable number for a team like the Suns. 22 is way too low.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, a lot of people will call that Stone Age basketball, where if you go back again and look at the records of teams when the three-point shot was first introduced, teams didn't shoot 22 in a whole season.
Yeah. Right, I know, it's insane.
Yeah, it is frustrating. Insane's a good word too. You can embrace the Suns playoffs, go all in with Arizona Sports. Tune in during the noon hour today and the 3 o'clock hour to snag an exclusive Phoenix Suns code word. Text that word when you hear it to 620-620 for your shot at scoring Suns playoff tickets. Again, code words coming up in the noon hour with Wolf and Luke, and the 3 o'clock hour with Burns and Gambo. Some final thoughts on this Thursday, draft night 2024, next here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Weekly and Murata, song of the day.
All right, Vinny. Today's song of the day comes with a story. Yesterday, after the show was over, dropped by the gym that I headed out to a golf course.
See Ralph Nader there, or what?
I headed
Perot?
No. I headed out to a golf course after going to the gym, and I was having myself a day. After 16 holes, I was 7 over par on a 72 par course. I get to 17, par 3, leave my drive short, but come up with a huge pitch and putt to save par. I go to 18, a par 5, all I need to do is par the stupid thing, and I've broken 80, and I bogeyed it.
81?
80 on the nose.
80 on the nose.
80 on the nose. I'm getting close, but and I was on the green in regulation, and I three-putted. Like the choking dog I am. So I went back after the hole. I was so disappointed in myself. I turned that cart around. There's a lag between me and the groups behind me. Went back to 18 to do it over again just to see if I could. Same thing. Same thing. Green in regulation into three-putt. So I said, you know what?
Does
I'm
that
just
make
not
you feel
good
better?
It did. It actually did.
Yeah.
So today's song hurts so good.
You know what I did after the show yesterday, Ben? What did
you do after the show, Vinny?
I went and took a nap. Actually, I went.
You need to start golfing.
I went down the street, had a lovely breakfast, and then I went home and had a nap.
There you go.
I took advantage of that bonus half hour that we got off.
Oh,
yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. You lit up when I said bonus. John Mellencamp, back when he was only John Cougar. This was his first number top five hit in the United States. 1982, Hurts So Good, today's song of the day. You'll get there, Bick. You'll get there.
I'll get there.
Bickley and Murata going off the grid.
Off the grid.
Brought to you by Sweet James Accident Attorneys. If you've been hurt in an accident, call Sweet James at 800-500-5200 or sweetjames.com.
Man, I am having problems with this computer today. Holy moly. Here we go.
Couple things is I love the preparation that goes into it. I have one bad day on the job. And it's the Monday after the draft, because that's when I get the spreadsheet of next year's prospects and it's blank. And I'm like, oh boy, I got a long way to go before next year's draft, right? So there's a lot that goes into it. A lot of people, contribute to it. So I love the preparation. And I love draft night. And then, I think a really underrated thing for me that I love to do, and last year was my first chance to do it. I've been able to witness it, but the opportunity to pick up the phone and call these guys who, this has been their lifelong dream, and they're surrounded by friends and family, and to be able to tell them that their dream is going to come true and their life is about to change, and be able to hand the phone to Michael and hand the phone to JG and welcome them to our team, that is an awesome, awesome experience, and one that I'm excited to do again next weekend.
Yeah, that was Monty Austin Fort last week talking about his favorite part of the draft. He's got a lot of it. Will it look like last year? The Cardinals were one of the talks of last year's draft with the maneuvering that Monty Austin Fort did, especially on the Thursday, the night of the first round, set them up with an extra round pick. I didn't think it was going to be number 27 a year later, but here we are. Lots of speculation about Marvin Harrison Jr. I've seen some posts on social media today, and now you thought we were into silly season before.
Okay.
The day of the draft and the hours leading up to it, it's a free-for-all. But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would it shock you if the New England Patriots stayed at 3 and drafted Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Yes.
It would shock you?
It probably shouldn't, but it would.
I can't say I would be surprised. It is the Patriots we're talking about. Mm-hmm. They kind of march to the beat of their own drummer.
Yeah. I think if I had to predict, it's going to be Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and that is going to be the end of quarterbacks until the Vikings feel they have to make a play for J.J. McCarthy. That's what I believe.
So the Giants don't draft a quarterback
scenario. That's what I was told. Now, again, maybe like Vinny said earlier, maybe the Giants are throwing out all sorts of smoke screens.
I mean,
I could be way wrong.
Our buddy Sal Palantonio said yesterday that the Giants are looking to move up to get a quarterback.
Okay.
So.
And on the Patriots thing, look, I know he's under the umbrella, but this is the first year without Bill Belichick, so we don't know exactly if they're going to follow, the past Patriot thing of you never know what's going to happen, wheeling, dealing,
and
stuff
like
that.
Well, there was a time when Bill Belichick was considered a great drafter because he always emphasized, smart players, versatile players, players that could do, that had chameleon-like properties. Oh, yeah, and left-footed punters.
Yeah, but they had,
that was always a specialty, too.
They would often trade one pick to get two picks, and then two picks to get three picks and stuff like that.
Yes, but also, despite what you're hearing now in the aftermath of the Belichick era with all the, documentaries that are out indicating the culture wasn't that great, they had a very defined culture, and Bill Belichick was very good at identifying players that he knew would fit into that culture.
Yeah, good point.
It wasn't always big names. I remember toward the end of his tenure, they drafted Kyle Duggar, and people are like, what? Worked out pretty well. So, they could be a wild card in this whole thing. I have a feeling, though. I'll say we're going to be talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. being a Cardinal tomorrow morning.
I hope.
Yep. And you can join us for our draft coverage. It starts at 4. If you're going to be out there, come by, say hello at the BetMGM Sportsbook at State Farm Stadium. 4 until the end of the first round. We will have you fully covered here on Arizona Sports. Thanks to Derek Hall, Darren Urban, Chris Cartman for joining us. We will be back tomorrow to discuss what the Cardinals did in the draft and get you ready for Suns T-Wolves Game 3. Don't go anywhere. Wolf and a guy dressed up as Maverick coming up next.